The following recording is offered by the Village Zendo. For more information, please visit villagezendo.org.
Good morning, everyone. You know, it's good to see all of you all in these little boxes. And you can scroll through and see many little boxes. It's strange and kind of painful, but bizarre. Huh? Sometimes, you know, when change is so immense, we can fail to see it. Instead of realizing that change is always happening, we lean back and we say, I'm waiting until things will be the way they were. As if there's some fixed place, some fixed time. But, you know, we all know profound teaching and just looking around in our lives. Nothing remains the same, ever. It's hard to take that in at this time when we're faced with this dangerous pandemic. How do we take that reality in? There's grief. A noble loss that we and some of our friends and Sangha members and family are experiencing. In this small community, we join with Tore and her family in the grief and sorrow of the loss of her father, Mark Mordecai Steiner. And we're sitting at the bedside of Kyogen's mother, of Ryan's mother, Lori Baker Aquata, who is on a ventilator in Brooklyn. And the good news is we can rejoice that Yuka, although in hospital, is recovering and gaining strength every day. And then there's the Sangha members. In this small Sangha, we have those who are active in the medical trenches, the doctors and nurses and chaplains, psychotherapists, who are offering compassion every day. So naturally, we have deep concern for everyone. And naturally for our own individual survival. And there's the stress, just on a day-to-day level of our ordinary routines, the instability of trying to reorganize ourselves, caring and protecting our bodies and minds, our financial and spiritual well-being. It's all new. Last Sunday, in our Sunday circle, our monthly Sunday circle, Joshin Rossi asked us to look at what we've learned through this experience so far and how that might change what we do going forward. It's a powerful question I sat with this week. Because when it's over, we may not want to get back to normal. We may ask us, wait, was it normal before? So on a fundamental level, it's not about getting back to normal. We can pray that this pandemic on a world level might bring about more awareness and the possibility of a more equitable economic system, a health system? Can we look again at our judicial system? Can we dare hope for a more just world? Our lives have changed radically with the social distancing. How do we act compassionately at this time? How can each of us utterly enter into the reality of this world, feeling the suffering and injustice around us, and at the same time maintain a kind of resilience and an independent self that can care and can love and can act in a compassionate way? Because there are so many triggers. You know, when I'm out for a walk and someone comes running by me without a mask, breathing what I imagine are viruses all over me, how can I react with compassion at that moment? Ooh, it's not in my nature, those of you who know me. Or my rude neighbor, such a pain in the ass. Can I check on him to be sure he's okay? That there's not something that I can provide for him? Or when I go out, knowing that when I put on a mask, it's not for me. Putting on a mask is to protect others in case I am infected. So when I put my scotch tape on my nose, which is now creating a red nose, so my glasses don't fog up, I have to think I am protecting the other. It's not about me. I can offer my compassion in that way. How do we face all this suffering? When we see the price gouging that's going on, how can we offer compassion even to those who think this whole thing is only about their own lives? I take refuge, as it were, in the three poisons of Buddhism. It helps me to understand the greed and anger and ignorance around me. It helps me to check myself when I have these automatic behaviors or instincts. Greed, the tendency to grasp, to take from the whole for the one. We saw it with all the hoarding that went on. I still don't understand about toilet paper, but never mind. the stockpiling and price hikes, and the disgraceful conduct of the politicians using this time for their own perceived popularity or loyalty. That act of greed stops compassion unless we're very careful, unless we're able to see deeply that this is part, as the teachings teach us, of the human condition, this grasping for me. And the balance to that is, of course, the anger, the pushing away, the blaming of others, the blaming of China, the blaming of 5G, the blaming of the sick or the authorities, that ancient me against you that arises out of all crisis and stops our compassion. And then the final of the three poisons is ignorance. Ignorance is not knowing who we are and our place in the world. You know, the practice of Zazen that we do and the engaging with the teachings help us to recognize daily our interdependence, to recognize how we're all interconnected, part of a seamless net of reality that has no boundaries. When we don't see that, our compassion is stopped. Our compassion has no energy unless we see that interconnectedness. And so that's a primary reason why we sit Zazen. We just sit there. We just sit there, quiet, open, ready. And for perhaps a moment, we can connect to the boundless, intertwined reality that we are a part of. You know, I had to smile when the governor of New York State, Governor Cuomo, said, "Hey, we New Yorkers get that we're interdependent." If you've ever tried to get on a subway before they were empty, as they are now, you know we're interdependent. We're interconnected. So we're asked to offer our compassion, but how do we do that? As I've thought of this the last few days, is the challenges to my compassion in particular, what called to mind is a koan. It's in the Blue Cliff Record and in the Book of Serenity, and it's about Ungan and Dogo, these two brothers. Well, we think they were brothers, we're not sure, but certainly they were very close and studied together for many years. And one day, the younger brother, Ungan, asked the other one, "How does the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara use all those many hands and eyes?" And I'm sure you all are aware of that image of Kanzeon or Avalokiteshvara, who has many, many arms and hands and eyes with which to see the suffering in the world. And usually within the hands, there are various tools that can be helpful to people in stress. So there'd be a rope and a ladder and a hammer and a hoe and a skillet and various tools. So the question is, how do they use all those? I mean, if you could just think of and imagine that for a moment, it could be a little confusing to use all those hands and eyes, all those arms moving with all these different tools. Huh? And so Dogo answers, he says, it's like a person in the middle of the night reaching behind their head for a pillow. Ungan says, "I understand." Dogo says, "Well, how do you understand?" "All over the body is hand and eye." Dogo said, "Yeah, well, that's pretty good, but it's only 8/10 of the answer." Ungan says, "Well, how would you express it, elder brother?" And Dogo says, "Throughout the body, the hand and eye." So, you know, it really is the question I'm posing to you today. How can we respond to the suffering around us? How can we embody that compassionate being whose whole body serves to soothe and heal and encourage and thus save all sentient beings? This is the one who hears the cries of the world, doesn't close off, but listens to using all the hands and eyes, all the ways that are possible to serve, to offer compassion. So the thing is, our hearts have to be open for that. And that's what I see in Ungon's question, how does the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara use all those many hands and eyes? It's not enough to have the resources, the many hands and eyes to act. Something else is needed. What is that? In ourselves, what is that? Dogo responds, it's like a person in the middle of the night reaching behind their head for the pillow. So natural. So flowing. Not really even conscious. What would our caring action be like if it were merely responding just as it is when we adjust the pillow at night? That's giving someone an extra mask, running an errand, listening to someone, calling someone. It's beautiful. And Ungans gets that, and he says, okay, yeah, I understand. But then his older brother says, wait, how do you understand that? And Ungan says, all over the body is a hand and eye. It's a brilliant, wonderful form of compassion, really offering my hand, offering myself to help. And in doing that, I also am healed. All over me, I am offering the healing of self and other. The engagement itself is the healing action. But Dogo, the older brother, says, wait a minute, it's well expressed, but it's only 8/10 of the answer. Now, 8/10 is a lot. But there's something that's not there. So the younger brother Ungan says, well, how would you say it? And Dogo says, throughout the body, the hand and eye. When it's throughout the body, there's no inside and outside. There's no self and other. No separation at all. Everything is brought into connection. Everything flows like the ocean. There is no helping one and helped one. There is just pure compassion flowing, pure intimacy. Such a view liberates our compassion, liberates our capability for intimacy. It's not about us and what we do to help others. That's radical interdependence. When we experience the wholeness of which we are part, then we can offer ourselves, can offer our compassion wholeheartedly, without the veneer of ego. And in such a way, we are really of service, both inside and, of course, outside. So we prepare ourselves by studying and practicing Zazen so we can act spontaneously. We can just reach for our pillow at night and say, don't you have a mask? I have an extra one. And whatever we do, we can relate it to our practice. So instead of a verse, which I often offer at the end, I thought of a technique that is talked about, is described in the Avatamsaka Sutra in Book 11, Purifying Practice. And in it, Manjushri is asked, how can beings serve others and open their minds and hearts? And he says that whatever they're doing, they should relate it to the practice. So whatever we may be doing, we could relate it to the practice. We could, like, when I drink a cup of coffee, I drink in the teachings. His example was, if they see a bridge, they should wish that all beings carry all across to freedom like a bridge. So I've written a few verses for us today. And I encourage you to write your own. Here's one. When I put on my mask, I wish that all beings be protected from the virus and also protect others. Or, when I open my cupboard, I wish that everyone have food and nourishment today. Or, when washing my body, I wish that all beings be cleansed of their greed, anger, and ignorance. Or, when I see an empty street, I wish that all beings experience the vast emptiness of interconnected reality. So I wish that all of you can find that compassion, because it will give us the strength to get through this time. By offering our compassion to others, we suddenly realize it's within us and it is what is keeping us alive and well. So I encourage you to consider that. Thank you.